The Guardian.
Hello, I'm Rosie Swash, and you're listening to a special edition of Music Weekly. This week we have an extended interview with PJ Harvey. Her new album, Let England Shake, sees the singer departing from the piano-led fragility of last album White Chalk to make way for a bolder, pop-orientated look at Our Fair Country. Ben Beaumont Thomas met with PJ Harvey earlier this week to discuss the album.
With this new album, which I really love, by the way, I was interested to kind of see the progression from your last record, White Chalk, because that seemed quite a kind of, if I can put it in such strong terms, personally apocalyptic record. And then this one seems more like a socially apocalyptic record. There's lots of death imagery and that sort of thing. I mean, is that shift an accurate thing for me to be saying? And how did that come about, if so?
Well, first of all, I'd say that as a writer, I don't write an autobiography, and so I never have. And White Chalk was not a personal autobiography by any means. What I've always been interested in is the way human beings relate to each other. You could argue that I've done that always, and I've done it on this record as well. The way we treat each other is how it all comes down to what happens, what the end results are. Everything from world conflict to the way you, a man and a woman would treat each other in a relationship. So I feel that I'm still exploring that, and I'm still using the method of storytelling through narrative and casting myself into different lives, different perspectives to take a look at that and try and write a song around that. So that doesn't feel anything different to what I've always done. You have to have that capacity as a writer to put yourself in a different situation and many different situations if you're trying to deal with different subject matter that's always going to be beyond what your limited life experience is. There's no way I can experience everything I want to write about, but I do have the capacity to enter into situations, imagine how I could deal with that, or how the narrator of the story would deal with that.
The situations that you're putting yourself into in this record are of very much kind of martial tones and sort of social situations, I think, rather than a kind of intense sort of personal world. But I think there's a slightly arcane tone to some of the lyrics, and they seem almost to me like either old war songs, maybe from the First World War, or school hymns, perhaps, as well. It seemed to oscillate between those two types of storytelling and singing for me. Are those things that resonated with you, perhaps?
It took me a long time to write the words, which I did quite separately from beginning to even think about the music, because I knew that in order to deal with such weighty subject matter, the words had to be working and had to be strong first, else everything was going to fall down on its face. So I spent about 2.5-3 years gathering together words, working hard at them, until I felt I had enough that were strong. And I got quite a lot of outside opinion on that as well from people who I respected, because again, I didn't trust even my own judgment that this set of words is working or not, because I was just so aware of the traps one can fall into when you start dealing with singing about contemporary world, war, nation. I knew what I didn't want to do, which was to come across as being too dogmatic or opinionated or self-righteous or pompous or any of the things I sometimes feel when people, through very good reasons, want to try and express and deal with the things that are happening today. But I knew I had to be very careful with the language that I use. That's why it took such a long time. At that point, when I finally felt I'd gathered together enough words that were strong and that worked on the page, whether I was reading them or somebody else, or whether somebody else was saying them, that was also a criteria I measured it by. Then I began to think about what the music needed to be doing. The words had so much weight in them already, they didn't need any more weight. So I knew the music needed to, continuing to speak in those terms, but it needed to be lightening, uplifting, energizing, engaging. I wanted it to feel like it had a communal quality. I knew that I wanted the words to be possibly sung by many people. And thereby, I concentrated mostly on the voice first of all and sang the words. I didn't touch an instrument, I just sang them. And I would sing them while I was doing other things, or if I was taking a walk, I would sing them. And the rhythm of the words would often present the rhythm of the song then. They inherently have a rhythm anyway, the words on the page. And the nature of the melody became very simple because it had to be memorable, simple, again, so that many people could sing it. It could get passed on from one person to another easily. And their melody, only then did I put music to it. That's why it's ended up sounding as you reference. So it's very, very simple, almost nursery rhymes, or very traditional in the sense of like a folk song or a hymn that is memorable, simple repetitions. That's probably how that came about.
As a way of creating a kind of a collective England-wide almost type of song rather than an intensely personal one, perhaps?
Well, I was very interested in traditional folk music during the writing of this record. I always have been, but I look very closely at very, very old folk songs, words from all different countries, from Iraq, Afghanistan, I looked a lot there, Cambodia, Vietnam, Ireland, Scotland, England. But when you take it right the way back to where songs started, it was as the storyteller going from one province to another, basically relaying the news. It was about the current news, bringing the news from one county to another, because there wasn't anything else. This is before printing press, before anything. Music was to do with community, relaying the news, to do with the land. And as I was looking at all of these ancient folk songs that kept coming across so strong, and I kept that in the forefront of my mind throughout the writing, that simplicity, basic carrying of news from one area to another.
I think those songs, like you say, from around the world, physically manifest themselves in the songs. I mean, there's the track England, where I thought I heard a snatch of it sounded like a sort of Arabic field recording or something like that, just quivering underneath. And then there's the 90 The Observer Blood and Fire track that's also crops up. I mean, as well as sort of being influenced by these things, you are actually drawing them into the songwriting and kind of extending it beyond England almost, it seemed to me.
Well, I was listening to a lot of music during the writing of the piece, and often I'd find myself really meditating on a piece of music and seeming unable to extricate it from the piece that I was trying to write. For instance, the Iraqi woman singing that you referenced in the song England, it's actually a very old Kurdish folk song that she's singing, and it's a love song. And I was so very moved by her singing that I wanted to marry it in some way with the piece I was writing, which in a sense was a love song to a nation. And I thought if those two could marry somehow, the Iraqi woman and this English woman singing our love songs, that would be something to aim towards, and that's how that came about.
consider yourself patriotic at all? I was interested to know, because there is a fiercely proud kind of sense of England and its sort of physical nature, and then you also say that it leaves a bitter taste in your mouth. What's your sort of relationship with Englishness, I guess?
Well, it depends how you interpret patriotism. I'm not quite sure how I'd interpret that word, so I wouldn't say I was patriotic, so I'm not quite sure what it means. Although, obviously, I'm a English woman living in England. I tried very hard and I kept in the forefront of my mind that I wanted the record to be about human beings, about emotions, no matter where you live. I thought a lot about trying to use language that anybody could recognise, no matter what country you live in. So those feelings of love and hate and push and pull, the hopelessness and the hopefulness, all that we have towards our countries of origin and where we're living, I hope that I was using language that wherever anyone lived, they could recognise those feelings towards their country. I didn't want it to be only limited to English people. That was the aim. How successfully or not I did that, it depends on the listener, but I wanted it to be engaging for the human quality, no matter where you were living, really.
I was interested in your vocal delivery, because you chose a rather neutral tone, but I noticed a kind of variety of different timbres and voices that you were using almost. It would kind of go quite girlish at some points, and then there'd be very high-pitched moments, which are much more high-pitched, I've noticed, on the last two records than they have been in some of your previous work, that's almost had this guttural quality to it. I mean, how else have you sort of evolved your voice over your career?
Well, it always comes down to the songs. With each body of work, I just have to unravel what the song needs, how it is best delivered, how it is best sung. My voice is very much an instrument in that respect, to always going towards delivering the song in the best way, delivering it with the right emotion, or no emotion if it's needed. So I can never tell how a voice will be on the record until the body of work's written, really. And then I know, again, what I don't want to do, how it needs to be presented. This one was very tricky in finding the voice. I took a long time. I despaired at one point, thinking I wasn't going to find how I could sing it. And I even thought about maybe getting another person to sing the whole record for me. If I sang in too low a voice, too confident a voice, it destroyed the words entirely. So I had to finally, through experimenting a lot, I came across a voice that was quite indistinctive, really. I almost wanted a characterless voice to be the narrator and nothing more, to not put many inflections upon it, and let the listener, the reader, make up their own minds about what's going on. I always avoid describing my intentions behind anything, because I don't want to ruin it for people that come to it and bring their own interpretation to it. And I think that's the beauty of music, is that one writes it, but then you let go of it and it just goes out into the world and people will make of it what they will. And that's its purpose. It's to serve other people. The work has to stand on its own outside of that. Just begun with this record to be writing in this different way. I've always been very engaged in what's happening in the world, but I didn't feel that I'd reached the stage as a writer where I could feel confident that I could write about it well without falling into the traps that I mentioned earlier. I've been writing for a long time now. Now I think I've discovered how I can use language to deal more with the world we're all living in. I'll probably want to keep pursuing that for a while, because it's still so new for me. Everything changes every day. There's endless source material. And so this record, in some sense, feels like the beginning of a chapter that might run for a while. And I felt that I'd only just started, really.
Are you optimistic about the world? At the moment in this record, frankly, there is imagery full of blood and rotting nature and quite shocking imagery. Do you think that might become more benign, or how do you see it panning out in the future?
I would consider myself optimistic in that I always have hope. I'd say I'm an optimistic person rather than a pessimistic one. I always carry hope for the capacity for change in people. Having said that, I don't go about with my head in the clouds or ignoring what is absolutely obvious, then we're in dire times. Mm. Going back to the music, I think, although, yes, there's very brutal imagery there, which is the world we live in. It's a very brutal world, so I needed to use brutal imagery. But at the same time, there's a lot of love in it, and there's a lot of hope, and there's a lot of beauty in nature, the nature references in the sounds of the music, in the quality of the communal feel of the words, and the love even described between people, between one and one's country. So that I tried to temper it all in the way that I feel every day is tempered by dreadfulness and something wonderful happening. And every day there's good and bad. And although, yes, the record deals in brutal imagery, I do think there's also quite a lot of uplifting qualities to it as well.
You said that you wanted to create something that wasn't dogmatically pertaining to the Afghan war, perhaps, or the Iraqi war. Were you kind of looking back at previous conflict and previous trouble within England and elsewhere?
My beginnings were in looking closely at Afghanistan and Iraq, but I found to make sense of that, I had to research a lot of history as to what had gone on before, because it's also relevant, extremely relevant to today. And so I had to go right the way back. And going back to what I was saying about feeling like I've only just begun, there's so much. I only touched upon a little with this record. There's so much yet to do. Hold up the clear glass, look and see soldiers standing.
That was Ben Beaumont-Thomas talking to PJ Harvey about her new album, Let England Shake, which is out on Monday. Next week, Alexis and I will be returning with our usual show, featuring Singles Club and a new feature called Five Records, where we ask musicians to bring in the five most important songs in their life. I'm Rosie Swash. See you next week.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.